On today's episode of The Good Word, Jason Goff joins us to discuss Nikola Jokic's great night, the bad ending from Russell Westbrook, how great and how far can Steph Curry take the Golden State Warriors, and we got more talk about the hating players from the past and the present. All that and a little bit more coming up right now. Man, we had a night last night in the association. Let's get right to it. This is The Good Word. Vincent Goodwill here with you, senior NBA reporter for Yahoo Sports. My man, Jason Goff, you're looking at us on YouTube. The white walls are behind him. That only means one thing. That man is in Miami. What's going on, Jay?
Yeah, that's either that or, you know, things didn't go out the way I planned it and I got kicked out the crib. No, I'm in Miami right now and hanging out with a couple of people down here doing some work. But of course, always love to talk to you. Always love to see you, my guy. But yeah, there's a little bit going on in the league as we get set for this playoff push here in a few weeks.
Yeah, man. Yeah, this is an interesting day. Like as today has progressed, we're recording this a little bit later in the day, a little bit later than usual, but we can still bask in the glow of last night and handle, man, why is Ja Morant being investigated again all at the same damn time? Nikola Jokic last night, let's start there, 61-10-10 against the Minnesota Timberwolves in a game that they lost because Russell Westbrook went full Russ last night. Jason, as we set it up, the missed layup, the closeout that wound up being the foul on Nikhil Alexander-Walker that led to the three free throws and everything else. Do you look at the majesty of Nikola Jokic or do you walk away saying, why Russ got to be Russ?
Well, I never walk away saying why Russ got to be Russ, because if he wasn't this way, then we wouldn't have the Patrick Beverley incidents. Then we wouldn't have the face-off between him and KD when they faced each other the first time after being teammates talking crazy. But, like, this dude, he's going to go down as not only one of the best players that we've watched, one of the most fearsome players that we've watched, one of the dudes that, for everybody who talks about athletes trying hard or taking nights off, one of the dudes who's never seemingly going to take a play or a night off. But, man, the moments. Like, Russell Westbrook and his energy it attracts the eye in a way that very few NBA players in this generation do. Like, you'll see guys, like, for instance, people talk about Jason Tatum and how his style is born. I'm like, I like watching him make tough shots every once in a while. Of course, he's a terrific player. There is never a time where Russell, even on the court, where you're like, he gonna do something. Mm-hmm. Like something's gonna happen. And we went through that little 4 or 5 year period. Like, we've come the arc of his career where it's like, oh, Russ, he can't shoot. Russ, he can't do this. How does he fit on this team? Now we're on the other side of it. It's now like great teammate, great citizen Russ, where he was always that, but we had to look at 27, 10, 8, whatever mm-hmm. he was doing on the mm-hmm. nightly basis. Now it's like, oh, Russ got a moment for you. And he did it again. Like, to me, The foul at the end was just compounding bad on bad on bad. You hope that it doesn't happen in a playoff moment, but you wouldn't be surprised if it did, because who gonna say what to Russell? The moment Russell gets on your team, he kind of changes it to, man, this dude is always going on 100 miles an hour, and then you go, oh, but there goes one of those moments. And he had one of those moments in a historic game by Nikola Jokic. And I'm sure everybody on Minnesota was very happy that Russ had one of those moments.
Man, look, for one, this was a game featuring two bad kids, right? Anthony Edwards is the bad kid of bad kids. Russell Westbrook is like the original bad kid. Like, you know,
the OG bad kid.
The OG bad kid. Like, I miss having bad kids in the NBA. But when you are in somebody's house with a bad kid, or sometimes a like pet, like, I'm not a dog person, right? So if I'm around somebody's house and they got a dog around, I'm itchy. You know what I mean? I'm looking around like, where you at? The dog is too quiet. And then next thing you know, the dog ripping up a pillow on your old stuff, or the dog ripping up your shoes, or that dog is being real cute and cuddly and all that other type of stuff. You never know what you're going to get. That type of energy is Russell Westbrook. Like, I will say this. Give me someone who plays as hard as right. Russell Westbrook. But I don't want the game in Russell Westbrook's hands. I don't want Russ in a spot at this stage of his career where thinking where he has to think the game more than he can react to the game. Because thinking to the game would have been pulling it out after the steal and then saying, you know what, even if they foul, go to the line, we can set our defense and figure it out. Because Russ playing off instinct is, oh, I'm going to fly down the floor and get this layup. Now, this is Russell Westbrook 6 years ago. He's going to dunk it because he's a much better athlete. But now Russell Westbrook at this age has just enough lift to not make it. And then it goes to the other end, and then it's the foul. And this Jokic stuff, it gets obscured there because, for one, this is one thing I don't like about Russ. Of all the things I love about Russ, Jason, the one thing I don't like. Always getting into it with fans and never, like, you got to sit there and take that accountability after the game.
Right.
Unless he's at the podium, he's not there. Like, sometimes you got to go in the locker room and take them bullets so your teammates don't have to take them for you. You can't just be around. And I know he got beaten up by the media for some stuff, but you're in a new situation with this team is trying to win a championship, and they're taking, you know, they're taking bullets for you. They're taking that equity for you. You got to stand up and take that.
Yeah, as a professional, I remember covering, you know, certain Bulls teams back in the day, and guys would be in line for contracts, and they'd have to answer all the in-game and post-game questions, and other guys who were also in line for contracts would be like, all right, that's not my responsibility, and just go home. It's like, no. At this level, you getting paid to do more than hoop, and he knows the deal. You know, you know when you stick around after a great game, why you sticking around, but you also got to have that kind of essence and that kind of discipline. And I think of discernment too, right?
Yes.
You know it's coming, right? Like we all been in relationships. You know when that uncomfortable conversation is coming, and the more you delay it, the worse it's going to be, because he or she may not bring it up, but it's festering. And it's bubbling underneath the surface. And what you don't want to have happen is game two in the playoffs, something silly happens, and you have, like, this is why reporting and people like yourself are so important, because you'll figure out, like, man, why did they look so disjointed in game three? Or what happened here? It's like, well, after game two, you had dudes answering questions for a cat who should have been in there, or, you know, taking the bullets for him. Like you said, you got to make sure that there aren't any chips in the armor. You got to make sure that everything is cool on the soil. And I hope it is, but in a moment like this where the Denver Nuggets are fighting for playoff seeding, like, they're kind of like been a weird kind of afterthought, especially with such an incredible player in Nikola Jokic in the Western Conference playoff situation. Like, you have to understand where you're at, time, space, situation. Like, it is underwhelming that he decided not to stand in front of that microphone and say exactly what happened, because also, for us, content-wise, you know you're going to get some great Like, we've had him give some of the greatest memes and the what? Like, you know, those things are awesome just because you sat there and answered some uncomfortable questions, or maybe an uncomfortable question. So, yeah, Russ knows better than that. He's been in the league too long, and I think he would probably say that if he looked at it in hindsight. But in the moment, you got to stand tall for your teammates.
I don't ever recall him really ever saying, you know what, that's on me. I take this. I own this. I don't ever remember that. I could be wrong, and maybe I am wrong, but there's nothing to me that sticks out like that. Like, everybody has to face the music. Not that the media is so important, but just being accountable in front of your teammates in that public setting so they don't have to answer it, and they're not the people of record, you know, when this is all said and done, that they're talking about you. Because now this team is two games behind the Houston Rockets. Don't think they're going to catch them, Jay, at the two spot. But they're a half game ahead of the Lakers at three. Right. And if you wind up being on the 4-5, the OKC line, that means you're playing OKC in the second round. You ain't trying to have that. If you're the 4-seed, you have home court advantage in exactly one round. And if you're on the three line, you might have home court advantage in exactly one round. And granted, Jason, we know we're going to say this without context. No Jamal Murray. No Aaron Gordon. Minnesota has been playing really, really well. And they have Denver's number. Like, let's put it in context. Yeah. Nikola Jokic, though, ain't nothing to put in context there, baby. That's 61-10-10. That ain't nothing. That's nothing. There is no context needed, Jason. That man is like Visa. You can put him in the 70s, 80s, 90s, whatever. He's going to do work. And I think, Jason, it's almost limiting to say, man, he's the best player in today's game. it's almost time for us, and maybe because he only has the one championship, that it limits the historical conversation that he's going to be in, because we only talk about David Robinson a certain way. There's a lot of reverence for Hakeem, but it's because he got that second one.
Mm-hmm.
He's in the strata of Shaq when Shaq was really, really, when 2001 Shaq, when he was killing the game, and Hakeem Olajuwon when he was running it. Like, there's not many rooms that he can't get into. I feel like he's in every room possible. Maybe, what, top 15 all time, somewhere around there?
Yeah, got to put him up there. And it's the way that he plays the game, too. Like, you know, what I love watching about him is, yeah, the footwork is immaculate. The instincts are ridiculous. But the way he actually physically manipulates the basketball, like, his hands in terms of catching, you know, pass off target, catching poor post entry, because post entry is a lost art. I remember watching Rod Strickland as a kid and thinking to myself, man, why does the ball seem to be on a string like that? And, it's not that he can, you know, he can pat you to death, right? He can do all that, but the layup package and all that. And then we see Kyrie Irving be birthed as a godfather, obviously. It's like, oh, this is Kyrie 3.0, right?
Right.
Jokic has that weird, I can manipulate the ball, I can finish at the rim, tricky finishes, floating finishes, just the touch, the overall touch of his game. When we think about bigs, we think about force and violence and moving people and banging, especially when you think of Shaq and Wilt and all these dudes. Hell, Bill Russell, the physical marvel on the court, like erasing people and cutting off water in the paint. This dude does it from a lens where, you know, we didn't get a chance to see Arvydas Sabonis play in the NBA, but all that shit that I heard as a kid was, hey, when Mike was running around at the end of Magic's career, at the end of Larry Bird's career, you had all these dudes running around the NBA. That was the best player in the world. I kind of feel like Nikola Jokic, like, I bet. Skill and instinct, actual, professional movements that you don't waste any energy. You don't
waste
any
movement. There's no wasted movement. There's
no
wasted movement.
No wasted effort. None. And he's doing it with an IQ level that's through the roof. Mm-hmm. And because we've seen bigs be able to pass, we've seen bigs be able to score. But this dude, damn near, he can run a pick and roll. He can beat a ball handler on a pick and roll.
Yes.
Aaron Gordon's career. Think about what we thought about with Aaron Gordon.
Yep.
Dunk contest winner and a number one option on a bad team as a young player. He's had that, like, Andre Iguodala growth where it's like, oh, yeah, you weren't supposed to be number one in Philly that whole time. You needed to have somebody with you. Mm-hmm. Aaron Gordon, his second half of his career has been one of success and championships, and it's a lot to do with that guy right there. So, man, the way we talk about Nikola Jokic, I don't think it's hyperbolic. I don't think it's overplaying it. He is one of the greatest players to ever play the game, and it makes me think of a time where dudes like that played in their own land, played across the pond, and we never saw him. We just heard about him, like Oscar and Arvydas Sabonis. He's doing this against some of the best athletes of all time in this generation of basketball.
That's why I always laugh when people think the name of the game is run and jump. Because, like, I swear to God, everybody, when we talk about, we're going to talk about evolution of the game later and Draymond Green and what he said and all that type of stuff. But if you placed Arvydas Sabonis, if you placed Nikola Jokic 40 years ago in the game and he dominated the game to the way that he's playing it now, right? Like, oh, he's a taller Larry Bird or whatever. And then you say, he's not athletic, he's not muscular, he's not fast, and all that stuff. There's no way he would dominate this game. People would say that. They would say, oh, he dominated that era because those dudes were plumbers and firemen. And he's a plumber and fireman. Like, they would never in their mind fathom that fat man could dominate the league for 5 or 6 straight years running. He's on a Jay-Z, like, Volume 1, 2 whatever album. Like Reasonable Doubt.
Yeah, yeah. It's a Blueprint. Yeah.
Seven straight summers. Nobody did it quite like I did it. Like, he's on that type of run right now. And we don't, I think, a second championship. I'm not sure if they have enough from the standpoint of consistency on a night-to-night basis. I think the 82-game season, I think we have kind of devalued it. But I think 82 games has shown us that consistency of performance and being able to do it every other night you'll find out in the regular season they can do it in the playoffs, because if they can't put it together night after night, they ain't going to be able to put it together for 3 or 4 straight weeks or 3 or 4 straight months or whatever it is. So that's the part with me with Jokic that I think we miss out on. The other part.
You just met.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry. No. The 82 game part. You just said it just now, and we always talk about like how many there's too many games in the NBA season. If they shrink the season, it'll feel more meaningful. But that part of it too, like you playing 100 games if you win the championship, like the war of attrition that takes place, and to be the person standing at the top of the mountain. Like if we play 50 games and you got a dude whose body, you know, there's certain cats' bodies who are only going to get out there 45 times to 55 times a season. If we play that and we eliminate those dudes as being factors just from a sheer physical standpoint, then we're talking about like the creme de la creme of this thing, especially with the number of possessions these cats play. Mm-hmm. I know people talk about load management and all that other stuff, but hell, you know, blame Greg Popovich and the ghost of Michael Jordan for all that. You know what I mean? Like blame, because I remember a time where you got 9-10 years out of your best player. It's like, all right, cool, he is donezo now. You get to watch him be at the end. You get to watch, you know, Moses Malone be at the end of a Spurs bench at the end of his career, not really doing anything. These cats now, 17-8, like Kevin Garnett was the first guy I was like, oh, this dude going to play for 18, 19 years. Okay, all right. And now it's becoming more and more commonplace. So that's simple point that you just made right there about the 82 games, this cat has been doing it in that body with different iterations of this team on an 82-game schedule for 5 years straight, coming to work every single day that he possibly can. It's been amazing.
Dude, I'm going to tell you, I think that's the thing that gets a little bit lost is, like you said, 82 games for 13 years or whatever. You know, you ain't blame. Don't blame Michael Jordan. Blame Chris Paul. That's who you blame. Well, you always blame Chris Paul for the CBAs that say, you can make more money on the back end of your career, so make sure you stay upright. You can be out here looking like Mo the bartender, but still get your money at the end of it, baby. That's all I'm going to say.
And it just happened to happen just by chance. It was when CP was, you know, a part of the old negotiation, you know, in his later years. You know who I think should get paid? Old dudes. Old dudes. These young dudes keep taking these spots. I don't know how we gonna change it. But I mean, if you want to do something before I get up out of here, go ahead and feel free to do so. You know, shout out to Chris Paul for always having the finesse on deck.
Always. And when we come back, somebody who Chris Paul can't finesse, Stephen Curry and the Golden State Warriors. We'll be right back with the good word. In other news in the NBA, the NBA is investigating Ja Morant, and this is not a tweet from 2023. Shockingly, Jason Goff, though. Stephen Curry went off for a 50 ball last night in Memphis. Ja actually did play well, but Steph did 50 again. Jimmy Butler added 27. That means they're 18-2 with Steph and Jimmy together. They pulled in that to that fifth seed. I know you don't want to be there, but they're there. Can we accurately describe Steph Curry? We talk about, let's appreciate LeBron. I swear to God, every time LeBron sneezes, let's appreciate LeBron sneezing. I feel like Steph gets kind of lost in this. Maybe it's because it's the baby face look and he looks the same way he did in 2015 or 16, even though he doesn't. That man looks like a much older man right now. We just think he looks like a baby face. But the fact that he is carrying this team to within a whisker of home court advantage, all you gave him was 20 games of Jimmy Butler, and he is like, oh, we back.
See, now I'm thinking about who's going to play Steph in the biopic. You know what I mean? Like Ice-T, you know, you get the right beard dye on Ice-T. I think he could pull it off. Like Steph, the reason why we don't appreciate him is because we're in the age now where we're inundated with highlights and, you know, and snippets and sound bites and documented. Like we have so much access that if you constantly get beat over the head with the greatness, you're like, all right, we get it. He's great. Not for me, man. I think my appreciation for Steph Curry has risen, and I was always appreciative from the moment we got introduced to him at Davidson, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But it's risen over the years because all of the things that he does are still box office. Like, when LeBron James goes in for one of these soaring dunks, we know, all right, you're gonna be out for a week. You keep messing around. You know what I mean? Like when he knew he was going to break the scoring record against the Thunder, they're like, all right, see you in a couple weeks, champ. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You done redlined it for a good 2 days now. Everything that this dude does, it seems effortless, and they call it Steffortless, which is mm-hmm. crazy to me because mm-hmm. it sounds so weird. But we have to understand that, one, shooting a basketball isn't as easy as he makes it look. We always talk about how hard it is to hit a baseball, how tough it is to play corner in the NBA, in the NFL. With these defenses that for a decade and a half now have been worked, schemed, and executed to stop him. And looking at dudes the night before, like, get your rest. You're going to run around with Steph tomorrow. Just make it hard for him. Mm-hmm. These are the best athletes in the world. And for a decade plus, this man has been lighting dudes on fire in a way that you can only dislike if you used to be the dude who had to run around and chase a guy at recess or in your varsity basketball. I feel like, in the moments where there are greats, because we do this, you know, Mount Olympus thing where there could only be one, like mm-hmm. like how we used to do and still do with, like, you know, the lady rappers, where it's like, oh, which one do you like best? Because there can only be one. And then you got a bunch of these bum ass dudes running around with microphones who can get away with everything. Like, I feel like that with Steph, where it's like, no. Look at what, 52 points, 10 rebounds, 8 assists. They needed all of them, mm-hmm. right? They needed every drop of that. And he's doing it on your floor mm-hmm. in a place where, since Tony Allen and Zach Randolph, like, Memphis has been a great basketball fan base and culture, and you go in the grindhouse, it's going to be a tough place to play. He has done this so many different times that, you know, it's kind of like the Giannis fatigue, where you see Giannis mm-hmm. get 34 and 11. You're like, oh, well, it's like, wait a minute, those are Shaq numbers. Mm-hmm. Like, with Steph, it's like, nobody's doing this. Like, I didn't get a chance to watch Larry Bird in his heyday, but I know about Larry Bird, and we can, you know, we saw Larry perform at the end in the early 90s before the back went out, and that's why the back was going out. This man has revolutionized the game. He's taken centers off of rosters, right? I remember when they used to have three big men or four sometimes on every roster. Mm-hmm. One of those dudes has turned mm-hmm. into a small forward down on the roster. He is such a special talent. He's such a special player, and he's a showman too.
Yes.
And the fact that he's marketable in the way that he is, like, I'll tell you this. I ask you this, I should say. If there was no LeBron, say LeBron James, and it's hard to say that because Steph just had some battles, obviously, in the right. finals with LeBron.
Right.
But if there was no LeBron, I think the league's marketing of Steph would have been so much different. Like, this is the dude you could say, hey, every man can identify with you because they think they're 6'3", 195 pounds with chisel muscle. You mess right. around and think Steph Curry is small if you want to.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
when we look at him on the court, you're like, oh, look at him. He's an everyman kind of guy. Like when Dustin Pedroia won the MVP for the Boston Red Sox, yeah, short, fat dudes running around his country think, oh, yeah, look right, at him. Right, we can right. celebrate because he's doing it. The league has this dude that has this gym that's just been LeBron this whole time. Mm-hmm. He has been, without question, the either second through fifth best player for 10 plus years. And then he does it in a run, a playoff run, where like, oh yeah, at some point the Warriors, oh, look at that, they're in the West Conference, oh shit, they're in the finals. Wait a minute, did the Warriors just win a few years ago? You know, like, that's what I was saying. Like, nah, it's over. You know, yeah. Clay done, Draymond getting mm-hmm. old, Draymond mm-hmm. out there looking like Mr. from Color Purple. You know what I'm saying? Like, things have changed so much, and Steph is just still out there bombing on you. Like, I don't know. Once you get it going like that, and especially in the first quarter, this ain't one of those slow burns. If Steph gets 15 or more in you in the first quarter, please believe he's not going to end up with 25. And he did it again last night. So blessings to him, man. That's another one of those careers that when it's over, man, you're going to get a chance to tell your family and children, whoever, like, yo, I watched the greatest, undoubtedly, of all time. And you can't really say that on a lot of different levels in too many sports that we consume.
No, he's the greatest shooter ever. I don't care what whatever the numbers wind up saying years down the line and everything else. I know in mind's eye, like, he's it, right? And he said, my tank is pretty full. Like, that's the scary thing about this, Jason, is that since they added Jimmy Butler, who we know is really damn ornery, but also really smart to know, oh, I'm playing with that dude. Like, he played with some dudes, but I think he knows I'm playing with that dude. 27, 5, and 4 on 47 from the field, 42 from 3, 91. And all they did was, we ain't giving you a super team. We're giving you Jimmy Butler, who is disgruntled in Miami, and adding these other pieces with you, right? And Draymond Green and everything else. So, Jay, this is why I ask you the question. Mm-hmm. The separation between the third-seeded Denver Nuggets and the seventh-seeded, or the eighth-seeded, rather, L.A. Clippers is 3.5 games, all right? It's never really been this close to the point that you're like, man, you can't turn away. The question I have for you, Jay, is how many real contenders are in the Western Conference? Like, real life, they can be playing in June. If we fast forward to June and I tell you Team X is here, you're not scrunching your face up to say, man, what the hell happened to them? How'd they get there? How many teams in the West? Because I can only think of two that I would be completely shocked. 2.5.
Right.
And three, the third being the Clippers. It's Houston and Memphis. Everybody else, I can see there's a path for them getting to June.
Houston's too young, right? They still got some things that they have to figure out. Memphis is on a slide, and, you know, firing your coach this late in the year and still being in that kind of play-in situation is just atrocious. So let me, Denver, for you.
Mm-hmm.
When we saw them win it with Uncle Jeff and Bruce Brown, like, they had some key dudes who they lost. Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, cats like that, who you know, when we get older, we appreciate the quote-unquote X factors a lot more, right?
Like, a lot more.
As young kids, we were like, Aaron McKee, wait a minute. Hold on. Why am I watching this dude play off ball defense?
I want to watch Allen Iverson. I don't want to talk about no Eric Snow.
I want to see Allen put it up 40 times. Everybody else be damned. Now, you sitting here like an old head, like, boy, you know, that Christian Braun, you know, can they rely on him in a big game? Like, who's going to have the Eddie House game where he just hit 7-3? Like, who's going to have the Shane Battier game? And I wonder, if it comes down to it, whether it be Golden State or Denver, whose others are good enough to steal a game for you? Or hell, you know, steal a series where it's like, hey, if you look at this three-pack of dudes who aren't the guys, they averages and their efficiency on the offensive end matching their defensive output. I just worry that outside of the Oklahoma City Thunder, who we talking about in that realm? Denver has had some losses that they've tried to, you know, cover up. I thought early on in the year, Jokic was doing this kind of craziness early, too early for me in the year. It was like, hey, man, at some point the boy going to run out of gas.
Yeah, save some of this.
And if Jamal Murray ain't going up against the Lakers, then, you know, he Walt Frazier against the Lakers. Everybody else, you know, he Jamal Murray seemingly, right? Like, and Michael Porter Jr., he, you know, that thing going up before you get it. So, like, all the things that some of these other guys kind of corrected or compensated for, I worry that the others aren't either being counted on or capable. So if we're talking OKC, if we're talking Golden State, we're talking the Lakers, we're talking Denver in the West, like somebody, well, two of those four probably going to find themselves in the Western Conference Finals. And who's got the best player out of that? Okay, Denver, right? Who's got the best team out of that? Oklahoma City. Who's got the best coach out of that?
Ooh.
Right? Steve Kerr, J.J. Redick, right?
That's a great question.
Was it Daniel?
That's a great question.
Like, these are the, when it's nasty like this, when there's this little group where you're like, ooh, if it's the brand on the can for me. If the Oklahoma City Thunder were anything else, it was on that can.
If they've
like,
done if they've done it already.
Yeah, exactly. If the brand on the can was different, we'd be like, oh yeah, far and away. The same way we probably should have been last year with the Celtics. When we watched that historically good offensive run, and they're like, oh yeah, but Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum, who, you know, at some point, something weird's going to happen.
Right.
And the ankle's going to turn like we saw the year before, something like that. So I got that four-pack of teams in the Western Conference. But man, it's hard to go against Jokic. LeBron and Luka would have to go crazy every single night on some Kyrie, LeBron game four type stuff. But I, you know, that's a lot to ask from those dudes. I think they're a little light in the middle, like Jackson Hayes, just like him better as a backup as opposed to a starter. But to me, it'd be that four, that four pack of teams in the Western Conference.
The crazy thing is this. Minnesota keeps beating up on these teams, but because they traded Carl and because we hear other players being in the news for other reasons besides basketball, we don't look at that team and say, you know what? They did make it to the Western Conference Finals last year. We don't think about them. And I'm not saying that we should necessarily. It's just funny that we don't. For Golden State, you bring up a critical point. That's where Steve Kerr is going to do the coaching because you know Steph and Draymond and Jimmy are going to be out there. Is it going to be Moses Moody that's going to be taking up a lot of those minutes? Draymond, Jimmy, and Moody have a great net rating together. Like, I'm not full nerd, but I know good when I see it, right? That's a possibility. Are you going to use the Brandon Podziemskis or the Post or whomever? And that's where coaching comes into play. Do you throw Kevon Looney out there because you got to play against a Jokic and you need a body to play against Jokic? Like, so much is this is going to be like matchup related. Like, even
matchups.
Like, even Jimmy and Steph on a pick and roll. I would be scared to death of trying to trap Steph if I'm leaving Jimmy with two on the backside and having him make a decision for somebody else. That ain't Draymond making that decision. That's Jimmy Butler making that decision. And if he's in the mold, baby, we got problems. I don't want to trap Steph, because I can't get defenders to the other spots on the floor quick enough before Jimmy can make a quick decision that can exploit me. These are the things that's going to make the Western Conference really, really, really fun. Like the Lakers, we don't talk much about them per se, but LeBron doesn't look healthy, or it doesn't look fully healthy, right? And with a groin injury, I don't think you get healthy by playing, but he knows how to manufacture it, right? And the Lakers have been better than we would have expected. But the question I ask you is this, Jason. Stamina. Who has the stamina? Because once you get out of the first round of the playoffs, you are playing every other day with no break. You playing day, you play, you got a game, you got a day, you got a game, and then you're traveling. Who's got the organizational stamina, the physical stamina, the mental stamina to do this in more than just one round?
Is that the reason why? There's a couple of reasons why Oklahoma City
is... That scares you? That scares you for that reason?
Because we haven't seen it. Like, we need results. Like, we need evidence.
Have they had enough pain for you?
I don't know. And also, how much pain can you endure on the fly? Like, what are you hearkening back to in your experience where it's like, all right, 12-2 run on the road. We okay, guys. This is Steph Curry and the Golden State Warriors. Yeah, this is what they do in their building. And all of a sudden, you catch Chet Holmgren's eyes getting wide, or somebody looking up, or Jalen Williams ain't as cool as he always seems to be, or SGA is now. You know, it's a big difference playing, you know, Orlando on a Tuesday and then you know, Utah on a Thursday. You're looking at your main defenders like, yo, for 11 days, you have this guy. And you better know that he needs to get to this spot to be efficient. Left elbow. You got to take away his right hand. You got to do this. You got to do that. And fouls get a little tougher.
Yes,
you
know, they do.
Referees understand that they can't be a part of this as much as they were in the regular season. Like, certain things, certain edicts are handed down.
Yes.
Certain primetime matchups feel a little bit different. You look over there and Doris Burke is calling all of your games for the series instead of your local. Like, it changes, right? So I wouldn't be surprised if Oklahoma City gets to the finals, but I also wouldn't be surprised if Oklahoma City get beat in the second round. I mean,
I would be shocked. Shocked if they got beaten in the second round.
Would you?
You would have to tell me. You would have to sell me something. You would have to really sell me on them getting beaten in the second round. With everything that I've seen throughout the season for them, basically for that to happen for me, that would mean Jalen Williams has to become the Jalen Williams that he was in the second round last year against Dallas when he was underwhelming, right? Lou Dort, that means when we're swinging the ball to Lou Dort in the corner, he's taking Paul George in the bubble shots, side of the backboard, right? Like, a lot of things I think have to happen for them to get knocked unless Steph goes supernova. If Steph goes supernova and they're there and Jimmy goes playoff Jimmy, all right, cool, I can see that. But that's two crazy things happening at once. If they're playing the Lakers and you get them in a track meet, oh baby, you can. That's good night, Irene. Yeah.
They're gonna beat the Lakers. They're gonna beat the Lakers. But like you said, you know, if that go like, what's the 4-5 line right now?
The four or five line right now is Lakers Warriors.
That's what I'm saying. So if you see Oklahoma City against Golden State, and they got to go to Chase, and you know things get freaky, like them down 2-1. How does Jalen Williams react? Right. Like, they're down 2-1, like you mentioned.
You know how they react? This is how they react. All this time, we've been talking about these young dudes taking it from the old dudes, right? And not just Ant-Man taking it from Kevin Durant in the first round series and sweeping them. We've been saying, young dudes, take your place. Young dudes, go do it. All right, cool. Time.
Yeah. No, I understand. It's just hard for me to feel like you could turn out that fire for four games. It's hard for me to understand how teams that have played, because if the Warriors don't turn the ball over, which has been the entire run, the entire step generation of Warriors, if they don't turn the ball over, then you're cooking with gas. Because if you're not taking away shots from that team in some way, shape, or form, then you're in trouble. And if they don't give the ball away, then you're really in trouble. I want to see Oklahoma City live up to the billing that they have earned, right? We saw this coming a year and a half ago.
Yes, we did.
when Presti was putting together the picks and, okay, they go draft Chet, and anywhere else, Chet would have been asked, hey, you got to be the star. Here, Chet, you're the third option. Sometimes you might be the fourth option when you're healthy. Like, they put this team together in a way where, and the acceleration of trajectories now in the NBA, like the Houston Rockets, the Detroit Pistons, the Minnesota Timberwolves, the Indiana Pacers for a little bit. Like, you get 2 years to figure yourselves out, and then we're throwing you to the Wolves in the playoffs.
I'm telling you this, and I've been saying this for years. Not years. I've been saying this for the past couple years. The NBA moves faster than ever, quicker than ever. And when you have what you perceive to be a window, when you have the max contracts, the super max contracts, the second aprons, you have a window of maybe 2 years before it starts getting nut-cutting time just on the pure finances of it. Like Oklahoma City, as financially solvent as they've been with the decisions that they've made, you're going to have to make decisions on Chet. You've already maxed out one guy, super max one guy. You already got Hardenstein making a big amount. You know you're not going into the aprons. You know you're not going over the tax or anything like that because you're in a small market. You've got to figure this out before you have to start dumping off these pieces or asking these young guys to take pay cuts from the market before things really get wild. That's why I'm always careful about young teams going all in too early. Like, don't press the button until you absolutely have to, because that clock starts ticking. Stay young. As young as you can, baby. Keep.
Hey, so what you're saying there, Vinny, is that the Thunder, it would not behoove them to go out this summer and go bring Kevin Durant back home to where he started this thing, huh? You know, KD, SGA, Jalen Williams. That's not the move with all them damn picks and young boys that you have to pay. You don't have to bring a general in there. You know, we see it all the time where an old cat come in and calm the locker room down. It's not that time yet. They're not in that moment yet.
The question I have is, it's funny. I was talking about this in pre-show with Dakota, so we moved the Kevin Durant topic off of it, but we're here. Is Kevin Durant no longer the big piece, but the complimentary piece that you add to a championship puzzle? Because you don't want him to come in and be leader guy. Like, he doesn't want to be leader guy. Houston. Ooh, he might be better in Houston because Ime Udoka is that leader.
So I'm saying, go be Clyde Drexler with the Houston back in the day.
Yeah.
Clyde and Akeem and them boys. Yeah. Go be the dude who give you 24, 22. I'll pop out in a big game six in the third round or something like that and go crazy. Go Kevin Durant on you. Like, because the only way it isn't that for me, Vinny, is if they win it this year. Mm. Like, that's the way them, like, young dudes against the ownership or against the front office, like, hey, the only way we all going to be able to ball together and do these corny-ass group, you know, interviews at the end of these games, because I think it's crazy. I like certain NBA traditions. I need to stay NBA traditions. The man who is the man tonight, that's the man who presents mm-hmm. himself at the mm-hmm. microphone. Mm-hmm. I don't need, shout out to Isaiah Joe. He put 31 on the Bulls the other night, but Isaiah Joe don't need to be in this moment right now.
Both
right?
Temptations. But, one mic.
Ain't nobody come here to see you, Otis.
Ain't nobody come here to see you, Otis. Yeah, I'm with you. But yeah,
they gotta win it.
Here's my thing. The one thing that I think Oklahoma City will have over all those old teams is that they not old. You can see Golden State like push that button to try to rev it up in the game four of a playoff series, and man, we ain't got enough juice. We got the will, we got the eyesight for it, we got the brain for it. We just don't have the legs for it. Same thing could possibly be with the Lakers. Same thing could possibly be with Denver, just in a completely different level because they're not particularly old. They just have a little atrophy. But since we just talk about young guys and old guys, we're going to have to talk about that damn Draymond Green and what Draymond Green just said when we come back on The Last Word. Welcome back. It's time for The Last Word here with Jason Goff, Jay. Draymond Green, of course, he has his own podcast. He said a couple days ago on his podcast with Baron Davis, he said, you know, on the topic of respecting eras, which is always a topic in the NBA, he said, people say you should respect each era, but the past eras don't respect us. Jason, we come from an era where our parents told us about not having cell phones, about not having cars, about walking through 6 feet of snow every day and liking it and being grateful and eating the snow for dinner, because that's all we had, right? Eating the Slinky at night. Like when Eddie Murphy said, we ate the Slinky, Eddie, and that's all we had, and we liked it, and we loved it, like that sort of thing. How much of this is these young dudes being super sensitive or the old dudes being salty?
I think it's a combination of both, right? Yeah. And it's funny, I was having this conversation at lunch today where, you know, let's be real. And I think it was Gerard Carmichael who started out one of his stand-ups back in the day where he was like, our grandfathers were the worst people who have ever roamed this earth because, you know, there's a lot that they could get away with and do in a new and more progressive era that would not be tolerated. You know what I mean?
Absolutely like, not.
Just up and leave a family. You know what I mean? Ask your grandmother about how awful your granddaddy was. Like, and then we get caught in this progressive crossroads where, you know, we have to be the emotionally intelligent man. We have to be the man who is allowing for everything. You also have to be a protector and provider. These young cats, and now Draymond Green is no longer a young cat, but this era of NBA players been caught in the, hey, we didn't have to ride the buses, right? Like, we weren't getting screamed at by our own home fan base, like Bill Russell and the boys were mm-hmm. back in the day mm-hmm. for just, you know, being black, you know? Like, they don't go through some of those things, but also, like, it's like when we look at our kids or our cousins or our nieces and nephews, they have the internet in their pockets at all times, mm-hmm. which is telling them what they aren't, what they can be one day, what they need to be. And all you have to do is open up the wrong app and find out about yourself something that you didn't even know was true. I think that's the space that these young NBA, this generation of yes. NBA players caught in, because there's continuous coverage. And now the coverage isn't by people who have been, let's say, vetted,
yes.
right? It yes. isn't by people who they have to respect their words. So those people get thrown in a box with people like yourself and people who have done this at a high level professionally for years. And then on top of it, you get the older athletes who are salty that these dudes are making. Let's be honest. Yes. It's the money.
Yes.
These dudes are
that's
very
where it
upset.
Starts at. Like, that's where it starts
yeah,
at.
Hey, God bless the NBA players that I have worked with and continue to work with, but every time a contract is mentioned, you see the closing of the eyes, like, you know what I mean? Like
yep,
they just got burned once again. So there's that. But I wonder, if Oscar Robertson had a microphone in the late 70s, early 80s, would he be saying these same things? Right? If Will Chamberlain, God rest his soul, had a microphone, would he be saying these same things? The coverage turned from the outsiders doing it to the insiders doing it. And this is the first group of players who have had to truly withstand the insiders doing it.
I'm going to tell you something funny because you just brought something up to me. Just because I'm a historical geek, I remember this. The NBA did the NBA at 50 in 1996, 97, going into All-Star Weekend in Cleveland. Ahmad Rashad did an interview with Bill Russell and Wilt Chamberlain, right? And they were in the studio. And Wilt is like 50. Wilt is like 2 years away from dying. He died young. He looked really good. Mm-hmm. So you didn't know.
They did.
Right?
Yeah.
But Ahmad asked him, he's like, well, how many points would you average today? And Wilt said, you mean like right now? And then he was like, yeah. I can give you 30 right now, big fella. And he wasn't saying it like me in my prime. He was saying me at 50 years old, I could step in against a 25-year-old Shaq, a 30-some-year-old Patrick, a 20-some-year-old Alonzo, the Kimbe, the Cookie Monster, Mutombo, God rest his soul. He was saying with full confidence, he laughed after it, but he wasn't bull. He said, I could give you 30 right now. Like, this is what all the guys think. I think what happens is, Jason, if at one point the young guy, here's what the old guys got to say, or what the young guys have. If the young guy said to the old guys, man, y'all had it so much harder. I don't know if I want to play in that era. I love the era that I'm playing in. And the old guys would be like, you know what? Y'all are so much more like skilled and y'all have more advantages than us. Then the hate would stop because that's where it winds up. Yeah, the era we played in was harder so y'all could have it easier and make all this money as opposed to y'all thinking that y'all walk on water. I get it. I sound like, am I old dude? Not Jason?
Yeah, of course. Well, you've been that big dog. Your hairline doesn't show it. That's all.
We're showing just a good angle today, brother. That's all.
you kept your boyish good looks all these years. That's the only reason why you don't think you are. I walk past every mirror knowing I'm an old ass man at this point. But that's you're right. You're right. It's the fact that the old heads want more love and want more credit. And the young dudes
they
want
to be appreciated,
want more credit. Yeah, everybody wants the same thing. They just don't know how to relay it to each other.
Because men don't know how to be vulnerable. We don't know how to go to another man and say, you know what, man, I really rock with you.
Because you be relinquishing that alpha male that we all, kind of espouse to. And then when you find out that the actual theory of that was debunked by the person who brought it up or who made it back in the 70s, they don't ever want to hear that. Anytime I hear somebody, an alpha male, I'm like, hey, the guy who was studying wolves who actually saw this and said this, debunked his own theory. And later on, like, oh, by the way, there is no such thing as a pack leader and an alpha male. Like, they would know what to do with themselves. They could cry themselves to sleep alone because they ran everybody off in their life. But cry themselves to sleep. The problem that I'm having and that we've continually had is other sports stars and icons don't interact this way.
They don't.
Right?
They don't.
You hear every once in a while a football player buck up and say the game is different. But for the most part, these dudes are out here championing these young players. Baseball, same way. Same way. Like you hear about how the game has changed and how bases aren't stolen at the same rate and, strikeouts don't matter as much. Like things that are important and germane to the conversation, but they don't overpower the appreciation.
Yeah.
It seems, and on top of it, the best television show for the last 20 years has consisted of that kind of thought process and that kind of verbiage. Yeah. These dudes have run into the point where it's like, man, we really are tired of this being the normal day-to-day operation of it.
Yep.
But now you've got the other side where you got young cats talking about they don't want to be the face of the league. Come on, man. What are we talking about here? Like, do you know what $1 billion looks like? It's running around L.A. every single night. Like, you don't want to have, and I know the dude, and whenever I hear the dude say, not everybody want all that, tell me if you're scared of being great. Just let me know. Because if you're scared of being great, then cool. You can go play in Portland for 10 years and bitch about not being an all-star, right? You can go anywhere you want to go. You're there, corners of the NBA. You know, some dudes have been drafted into some of those corners of the NBA. Don't worry, fam, because when those lights go off, you'll be a lot like we see a lot of NBA players, ex-NBA players. When those lights go off,
ooh, baby, they have a hard time. They have a hard time.
Competing on the internet and talking crazy. Like, anytime I see these dudes, it's always a fight story, which is cool, but it's like, hey, man, did you have any fun in the league? That's why I like listening to Jeff Teague, because he tell you, hey man, I had a ball, especially at the end there where I wasn't playing, and mm-hmm. he makes fun of himself. Like, that's the other thing. The league is a lot more intelligent and a lot more aware than I think it gets the reputation for, because if you talk to the right guys, hell, I remember talking to Kenny Anderson at the Final Four back in the day in Atlanta, and it was one of the greatest interviews I've ever done. We talked for like 35 minutes on a radio interview because he talked about his last 3 or 4 years of the league where he was just hanging on because he didn't know what was next in his life. Like, if the NBA player allows themselves, and the NBA old head allows themselves that kind of vulnerability, I promise you, these young cats would be like, oh man, these are dudes who went to battle for us. Like, look at Pops showing me that he could cry a little bit. Like, look at my uncle showing me that, hey man, marriage ain't work out and it was because of me. That's the kind of the relationship that the these teaching. Young dudes need. And they don't look at these old cats like that. And that's problematic, because you're going to have a chasm. There's going to be a real divide when we talk about the NBA's greatest 150 or 200 players, and we keep adding to this list. I don't want to see Draymond Green looking crazy at Charles Barkley or Shaq looking crazy at Joel Embiid. Like, that's not the way this sport's supposed to be. Like, you compete, you win while you can, and you get up out of there and allow the other dudes to make money after you, knowing you laid the way.
Yeah, that's unfortunate. That look.
Yeah.
That is just unfortunate. That's all I'll say.
Yeah.
Last thing, yeah, Jason. Sucks. Joel Embiid is out. You know, well, he's long been out. Like, he's been out when he's been in throughout the course of his career. Underwent plans to go on knee surgery for that troublesome left knee. That's bad news. Good news is your man, Carmelo Anthony, who's been not announced, has been revealed that he is in the class for the Hall of Fame, first ballot. One of the league's all-time great scorers, probably just was not one of the great winners because he wasn't in the best situation. How do you think history will look upon Carmelo Anthony when we remove him from the New York Knicks, when we remove him from the Denver Nuggets of the time? They should not have given away his number, but that's neither here nor there. Like, how do you think history, will history look at him as a Charles Barkley, who I think we kind of look at Charles and say, man, Charles played on some teams, but Charles was a monster? Or will we look at him and say, oh, he's a Dominique Wilkins type, where he couldn't elevate his team to a real championship level? I think there's a level of not all non-champions are created equal.
True. And you just mentioned two of my favorite dudes of all time.
Dominique
Wilkins was, man, listen, when I got a chance to work in Atlanta and do the pre and post game show for the radio side of things, like, picking Dominique Wilkins' brain was like one of the more enjoyable situations that my career has ever presented me. I got a chance to cover Carmelo Anthony's Final Four run in New Orleans when he was a freshman. Mm. And when you talk about supernovas, I wasn't there for Danny and the Miracles, right? The Kansas run. Like, I wasn't there for some of these great freshman year runs. Right? I had already been in the business by the time Kevin Durant did his thing in Texas, and then Michael Beasley did it the next year at Kansas State. But when I tell you, a star, you know when you're around a star.
Yep.
Like, you know you when you're around that dude. And to see the Oak Hill progression when we got introduced to him, and then, bang, prime time, 1 year, Syracuse, take you to the Final Four, you know, go into a Final Four that was star-studded. We're talking about T.J. Ford, Dwayne Wade, you know, Kirk Hyrick, and Nick Collison with that Kansas squad. Mm-hmm. Nobody had a chance. Nobody had a chance. And if we really want to be real about it, you know, the Olympic stuff is cool. right? And of course, you know, Amari Stoudemire cutting his hand on that fire extinguisher. Like, there are certain things where you're like,
fire extinguisher, not fire hydrant. He'd have had his hand amputated if he messed with him.
ain't no wine bathroom's gonna make that thing grow back if he hit it on a fire hydrant, right? But like, for a good 5 to 7 years, though, Vinny, we talked T-Mac, we talked Kobe, block to arc.
Ooh.
I don't know who was doing it Ooh. As well as he was. Kobe, tough shot maker, supreme scorer, one of the greatest of all time. And on the block, I'll tell you that Carmelo Anthony was a better scorer, better player. And you don't even have to say, like, he was on teams and didn't meet the moment. Carmelo was never a good defender. He wasn't, as some people thought, as good a rebounder as his body would have had you think he should have been.
Mm-hmm.
But the marketable skill of putting the ball in the hole. Like, how many teams do we see where it's like, man, this team's terrible, terrible for a half a quarter a game because nobody wants to rock and the people that do get to rock can't come through? Man, please. You watch that dude. I remember that MVP type run, that top five MVP finish year where every Sunday, back when the NBA was on NBC, you mess around and watch every Sunday afternoon that 2 o'clock game, Madison Square Garden, he had that rocking because he was doing things that against defenders. Like, I'm watching Luol Deng shut down wing after wing after wing.
And couldn't do nothing with him.
Oh, my God. Like, Melo is one of my favorite NBA players of all time. He's one of my favorite dudes because he was on Cribs, and he took it the way any young man would take it in terms of that little practice there is trying to play on him on MTV. What was it? The Ashton Kutcher
punked,
show,
right?
Punked. Yeah. He was on Cribs. He was on Punk. Like, he's had so many moments. Now we get to see his son do his thing coming up here soon. I am ecstatic that cat is, we knew he was going to be a Hall of Famer.
Yes, we did.
We knew that he was going to find this time in his life to be celebrated. But there are certain dudes, man, everybody got their guy. You know, Jordan is the god for everybody or so, most people. But I was always the guy who was like, all right, who else can I kind of, you know, cherry pick to watch and be like, ah, I can't wait to see that dude play live or can't wait to watch his games. Carmelo was that dude for me.
I tell you who you wasn't watching.
What's that?
You already know who I'm going to say. I tell you who you wasn't watching. Living in Chicago. Jason Goff wasn't watching no Scottie Pippen.
Here we go, man. Yeah, I'm not going to let you do you do this every time. I'm not going to let you disrespect Scotty.
Sitting
Scotty
Bull.
Scotty.
Sitting Bull.
All right. Well, it's been nice to talk to you, man. This has been cool. I appreciate your time. Dakota, it's a pleasure meeting you. I'm not going to allow it. There's certain things I'm not going to allow. And Scotty Pippen, hey, you and Bo, you know, and y'all, I love y'all to death. But anytime, I don't even like things that rhyme with Pippen. Because anytime one or both of you say something, I know it's the Scotty Pippen slander segment coming up. And you just set it up. I didn't even give you an alley-oop. You forced a shot 17 on the shot clock just now. This is just something that you wanted to do. Ain't no way in hell we should be talking about Scotty right now when Carmelo Anthony is being applauded. Okay? Yes, I was watching Scotty when he sat. I was watching Scotty when Hugh Hollins cheated us out of a damn Eastern Conference, you know, finals victory. I was watching Scotty when they drew up the don't do that. Don't do that. Don't do that. He had migraines. Okay, I was watching Scotty when he was being abused Ow. By that thuggish group known as the Detroit Pistons. I was watching Scotty when he was getting, you know, put in a chokehold by Charles Oakley as a rookie. Like, Scotty has lived a tough life, man. Okay? I'm not going to allow for this. Okay? Not on your network. Not on the Yahoo Sports Ball is Life network. Not on
Ball
the
Online network.
Network. None of that. On no network will I allow Scottie Pippen to be slandered in this way, sir. Not happening.
Jason Goff. Not on my time. Jason Goff, ladies and gentlemen. Chicago Bulls pre- and post-game host. Host also on The Ringer. You catch him a bunch of other places. Scottie Pippen Michael Jordan was so great, he went to the Hall of Fame as two players, himself and Scottie Pippen. Thanks to producer Dakota and the entire team that worked so hard behind the scenes on this show. I'll be back next week with another episode of The Good Word. Until then, everybody be safe.